Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
John Boehner rejects the original Democratic tax proposal. Occupy protests are putting pressure on mayors and forcing showdowns around the country. And a Washington man cuts off his arm with his own homemade guillotine.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, October 28th, 2011. Portland police hope surveillance video will help the public identify a man who attacked a crowd of people at a Portland Max stop. The suspect struggled with a teenage girl and stole her purse Tuesday morning on a westbound Max platform at East Burnside and 162nd. This according to Officer Gabe Maldonado of the Portland Police Bureau. He then fought with several witnesses, knocking one man off the platform and onto the tracks. One woman had a seizure after the suspect punched her in the head. The suspect was described as a black man in his mid-20s to early 30s with short hair. He was wearing a red or orange t-shirt and black jeans. A Gresham man faces federal charges after admitting that he flew from Portland to Guam with 500 rounds of ammunition in his carry-on luggage. A federal magistrate's complaint out of Guam states that Nario Eater, 66, deliberately undertook efforts to ensure he would defeat TSA security measures at Portland International Airport. He boarded the flight on Monday after using an unspecified type of gray tape to conceal the ammunition in a carry-on bag. The complaint does not specify exactly what kind of ammunition it was. Investigators in Guam found the ammunition when he was trying to board a connecting flight to Micronesia.
Okay. I was going to ask if he had some sort of Soldier of Fortune-escapade waiting for him in Guam, but apparently in Micronesia, which I thought was a made-up place.
No, it's a real place.
Here's a dumb question. Is it tiny?
It is. It's a tiny, tiny little place.
Okay.
Hence its name.
I think it's actually a chain of islands. What would you be doing in Micronesia that you need a lot of... Also, if it's a place where you're going where you got to just be getting your blast on, it seems like the kind of place where you could probably get ammunition once you arrive.
Also, I think the important part of the story is that he managed to fool TSA agents in Portland, Oregon, but they caught him in Guam.
Yeah, that's a fair point as well.
Apparently, they do a better job of this in Guam.
You can make the argument that in Guam there really isn't a whole lot else to do. It's just picking your teeth with a knife and just waiting for a guy to walk through and set off the bells.
You know, it's always tomorrow in Guam.
Is that true?
Yes.
You mean like in the heart?
Well, that too, but because of the whole time zone thing, it's always tomorrow in Guam.
Someone says, so does that mean if I go to Guam? Well, what happens if I'm there?
Well, if you go to Guam, you lose an entire day of your life. But when you come back, you're from the future.
So if I just fly fast enough in the opposite direction, will I never age?
Yes.
Excellent.
Or you're Superman.
That's my new plan. Apparently, this may not be scientifically correct. Someone says, Micronesia is a huge place full of tiny islands.
and even tinier people.
Yeah.
Because they have to fit on the tiny islands.
It's a...
They're like Lego people.
Where do you think micro machines come from? They don't just fall out of the heavens.
Micronauts, their space program.
I had something else there.
They
call each other
on microphones.
Yeah, I wanted to make an inner space reference for some reason, and I don't know why that would have been. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Friday, October 28th, 2011. Thank you for coming by and enjoying it as a cavalcade of whimsy and occasional information today. You got your Science of the March coming up later on, bottom of the hour, and in around 45 minutes, your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, we have Mr. Big Jim Willie going to be joining us for Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also, Taser Watch, Penis Watch, and Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week. In Geek, here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Speaking of Lego people, the 100-pound, 8-foot-tall, mysterious Lego man that was found on a Florida beach may soon be sprung from his holding room. Sarasota County Sheriff Tom Knight said yesterday that Lego man could be freed from the shed where he's been kept for 2 days. The giant Lego appeared on Siesta Key Beach.
Is he being kept in there with like a Lego dog and then like a Lego Lindy Inden to electrify his junk?
And they got those giant plastic chains like the skeletons carry.
Like a Lego plastic hood on him?
Yes.
I don't know what I think!
He could be freed from the shed. The giant Lego appeared on Tuesday morning. The shirt said, "No real than you are," along with the words Ego Leonard and the number 8. Local newspapers report the name Ego Leonard is the name of a Netherlands artist, but it wasn't immediately clear who was behind the work or how it ended up washing ashore in Florida. Knight says Lego Man is being kept well and hopes the giant fiberglass man can be placed on display somewhere in the community.
Every time you say Lego Man, I get that Paul and Storm, oh, Lego Man thing going in my head, except it's
Nugget Man,
right?
Yeah.
So, all right. And this is all true. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do so via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. If you'd like to take it with you as you begin the rest of your day, you can do that as well. It's at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm.
The Wall Street Journal is revamping its bestseller list by letting the new kids into the club, ebooks. Yes, that means that your own self-published zombie romance historical fiction book, if it's an ebook, is now eligible for the Wall Street Journal bestseller list.
Awesome.
The Associated Press reports that Nielsen, who has provided the journal with lists based on physical sales of books since 2009, will, as of this weekend, provide 4 new bestseller lists, ebooks, paperback, and hardcover combined in fiction and nonfiction, and ebooks only in fiction and nonfiction. The New York Times and USA Today already include ebooks in their bestseller lists. Like the Times, the Journal and Nielsen point to increasing the accuracy of their lists as the reason for the change. Nielsen BookScan VP Jonathan Stolfer said, "These new charts uniquely reflect what people are really buying and reading and will most definitely advance the industry's understanding of ebook bestsellers. The new list won't include the actual numbers of units sold, just rankings."
Well, it seems like that's, especially because it's a more accurate way to track book sales, because with physical books there's no definitive record. Presumably there is, but there probably isn't in point of fact, because a lot of it is just done with cash or it's like overstock or something. Whereas if something is a physical download or a physical transference, then there has to be a record of it somewhere. It's not just like a thing you can just be taking out of your tote bag and handing to a guy. So. And they're going to, is it, I missed this, is it going to be merged with the regular list, or is it going to be ghettoized in its own sort of?
I think it's going to be ghettoized. I think they're going to be separate lists.
All right. So it's the Oscar for Best Animated Film of the book world.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, where do I start? There may be an Occupy Portland showdown coming Saturday night in the high-end Pearl District neighborhood.
Why does it have to be Saturday night? I've got plans.
Yeah. You can swing by. Okay. On your way to or from somewhere to see if the police are beating anyone.
Awesome. I can get some sort of an app that alerts me. You know, like as the whip comes down, it can just buzz me to wherever, you know, from wherever I am, and then I can arrive. Okay.
This is why we need an intern, by the way. You could send a guy down there and then have him alert you if something's happened. Say, just hang out. And then send me a text message, and I'll just show up from wherever I am.
Maybe we can just do the thing where we give a homeless guy half of a $5 bill. We say, you get the other half when the violence starts, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Activists plan to march on Jamison Square Park on Saturday afternoon and then spend the night in Northwest Portland. But the city will not allow them to camp in the third park, according to Sam Adams. He said Occupy Portland would not be allowed overnight in any park other than Lonsdale and Chapman Park, where they already have encampments. We will not allow Occupy Portland to set up an alternative encampment at any other city park, the statement read. We will continue to monitor the Occupy Portland protest and make practical day-to-day decisions like these as warranted.
So they won't allow them to encamp themselves at any other park. That sounds like a dare. It sounds like Sam Adams is calling you pussies. I wonder how somebody could disprove that.
You know, they really just don't want you to go there because they think you'll upset the fancy Pearl District people.
And because it's full of tasty, tasty candy. Go there now.
There'll be free donuts.
Do it.
Adams left Commissioner Amanda Fritz in charge. Oh, no.
Oh, God. Wait, hold on.
Oh, God.
Nobody told me that that was the case.
Oh, man. And she also said the park rules would be enforced. Speaking from her office in Crazy Town.
And she said, well, cackling and then scratching at her face.
She said, we're enforcing all park rules in all the parks. According to a posting on the Occupy Portland website, activists will march to the Oregon Convention Center and then back across the Broadway Bridge to the Pearl District. Pearl residents had mixed feelings about activists settling in at Jameson Park because, you know, it's hard to be like super rich and a yuppie, but also like super liberal and live in Portland.
Well, the thing is,
you're often torn.
As a white person, you'd think that you were free from those kind of difficulties.
I'm the regular people. I care. I shop at Whole Foods.
You can see the regular people from where you are. If you look way, way, way down the street, you can kind of catch a glimpse of them.
Rachel Martin, who works in the Pearl District, said, as long as it's peaceful, that's fine.
And color coordinated.
And as long as they're still welcoming to people walking their dogs. That's an actual quote. I did not make that up.
Portland.
Pearl resident Liz Marote said, again, with the dogs, it might disrupt my dog more than me. I'm in support of Americans showing their opinions on aspects they believe in. The unspoken part of that being, my dog, however, is a bastard.
Exactly.
My dog hates liberty.
He can't be helped. He can't be controlled. Whatever he does, he's a free individual.
America. He's a German shepherd. The Occupy protests are also putting pressure on mayors in other parts of the country. After 3 weeks, police in Atlanta cleared protesters out of a city park early Wednesday. Mayor Kasim Reed explains why.
It got to a point where you could clearly see that the situation was deteriorating. There was an unsanctioned concert that, in my opinion, put people at risk. 600 people came. There was no security plan. And then about a day later, there was a gentleman walking around the campus with an assault rifle.
You might have mentioned that first. Guy just wandering around with an assault rifle. That seems like, by the way. Also, there was some unsanctioned music, apparently, and the assault rifle.
It was really the drum circle, yeah. but the rifle just... Reed says the last hour came after the man started walking around with said assault rifle.
In Georgia, it's legal to walk around with an AK-47. Once that happened, I made the judgment that it was time to control the campus and clear it. But we certainly took extraordinary steps. We sent clergy to try to speak with him. Ambassador Andrew Young has been there.
Wait a minute. So I'm confused about like 100 things here. So
he's very calm.
Especially for a city where apparently you can just walk around with an AK, just, you know. as you go about your daily affairs to buy some chips or whatever at the store.
Thank you, Georgia.
So it's confusing that you can just walk around with an assault rifle, but then if it's legal to do so, how is it that you can use that as a justification just to be clearing people out?
Because you're city government, and you can just make those arbitrary decisions.
I knew it was something like that.
It's not legal to park to camp in the parks, but we're going to let you camp in the parks, but we're not going to let you camp in this other park. Because even though it's illegal to camp in any park, we're just going to decide that 2 out of 3 parks is as many as you can illegally camp in.
It's a power thing.
It is. It's like if you're in charge, you get to just kind of arbitrarily decide what's legal and what's not.
I see the appeal now. I've always wondered.
That's why people go into politics.
All right, so I can punish those who wrong me.
Yes.
Whether or not it's actually happening, even if it's just perceived.
And just arbitrarily change the rules on a whim.
Fantastic. All right. Amanda Fritz, not as crazy as she might seem.
Mm-hmm. It's my Amanda Fritz noise. Right. I have no idea what she actually sounds like, but whenever I read a statement by her, I see the bus driver lady with all the cats from South Park.
Shut up!
Protesters who describe themselves as the 99% of Americans who are not super wealthy also face the challenge to explain what they want. Recently, investment strategist, Wall Street CEO, and radio host Peter Schiff went down to Lower Manhattan's Zuccotti Park, where Occupy Wall Street protesters have been camped out for weeks. He had a sign reading, "I am the 1%. Let's talk."
Okay, that's kind of great, though. You have to sort of admire a guy who just goes down there and just says, "Me, I'm hella wealthy. What do you want to know?"
And he had a camera crew. He's the author of the book How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, and he says the government's guarantee of individual bank accounts is a major cause of the country's financial problems.
The government has already poisoned the banking system by guaranteeing everybody's account. That's not capitalism. If the government wasn't guaranteeing bank accounts, banks would be a lot more responsible because the depositors would actually care what the banks did with their money.
Oh, God. It's like shades of Jim Cramer, where it's just like a rabid monkey on television spinning a stock wheel.
He says he understands the protesters' frustrations, but believes their efforts are misplaced.
I sympathize with the situation that they have, but I'm trying to help encourage them to direct their anger towards Washington. You know, it's big government that has wrecked the U.S. economy, not capitalism. They need to understand that. And if they really want a bright future to...
No, we're done.
You know, I don't disagree with him. I just don't like him.
I just find him off-putting.
I just dislike his voice.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us later on this hour. Your entertainment news and science on the march. Don't forget, we weren't speaking of this at all, but it was either this or just finished hearing Mr. Strident voice continue to talk. Don't forget to go to geekolantern.com and you get a chance. A couple new entries posted since we last spoke. Yesterday we had the Plants vs. Zombies and Adama.
Yes.
Bill Adama. So you go to Geekolantern.
And there's also the new one that says, "Why So Serious?"
That's right. So you go to Geekolantern.com, check out all the entries there, and you get till the end of today's Rick Emerson show to get your Geekolantern carving photo in. And it's Geekolantern at RickEmerson.com or contest at RickEmerson.com. And you can also see a listing of the prizes that are available there, courtesy of our friends at ThinkGeek. That is it, Geekolantern, just like it sounds, all one word, Geekolantern.com. And we'll talk more about that next hour on the Rick Emerson show. Here is Don Taylor.
Police in Bellingham, Washington, say a man who walked into a medical clinic with his right arm severed has indicated that he cut his own limb off with a homemade guillotine.
Did he indicate that by saying it?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Or maybe he was just pointing and screaming.
Like a McDonald's picture menu.
Officers who checked a wooded area near a urology clinic on Thursday.
Well, that's the wrong clinic to go to. Yeah,
found the severed arm and the guillotine in a transient camp. The victim and the arm were taken to St. Joseph Hospital in Bellingham. Police spokesman Mark Young says the man was later airlifted to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle in hopes the limb could be reattached. Young tells the Bellingham Herald the arm was severed above the elbow. The victim was not identified and his condition was not immediately known. Young says police will dismantle the guillotine.
Now, it was a homemade, it was like a guillotine he built?
Yes.
Well, that's impressive. Why is he homeless?
I sound like the
freaking stock. Get a job, hippie.
It also doesn't say whether he cut off the arm accidentally or on purpose.
Well, a guillotine's not like a gun. I don't think it accidentally goes off and removes one of your arms.
No,
it seems like
you
have to really make an appointment for that.
You're fixing your guillotine. You're setting up your guillotine. I'm just going to reach over here and grab another screw. Oh, no. You know?
It seems like you could get work somewhere if you're able to build a guillotine. There's a call for that, if only in the serial killer market.
Also, apparently the arm was healthy because they're going to try and reattach it.
Well, it's a clean cut.
So it makes you wonder why he wanted to cut it off if it was indeed on purpose.
Maybe it was a proof of concept.
Did his arm offend him?
No, I think it might have been, sure, it works in theory. But, let's see if it actually, all right. Whoosh.
Maybe he was trying to make a fake guillotine for Halloween and he failed to understand that you have to have that little cutaway part.
The second blade.
To go around the,
Yeah, all right.
I don't know.
Did he walk all the way there? He didn't wheel it outside the clinic and do it like right outside.
No, it said it was a wooded area near the urology clinic where there was a transient camp.
So he was already living there. It wasn't like he set up.
So, he was building
like David Blaine or something outside a hospital.
Maybe he was trying to do a magic show for all the other hobos.
Okay. It seems like that's an audience that doesn't. Okay. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Is there a photo of the guillotine?
No.
That's too bad.
No. A Canadian man who lost his guns when he shot at some ATV riders expects to be reunited with his weapons in just under 2 years. Provincial court Judge Gregory Lenihan determined Wednesday that the prohibition order keeping Michael Golden, 51, from his 43 rifles and shotguns and one small caliber pistol will expire on October 4th, 2013. While continuing to prohibit access to the firearms, Lenihan did give Golden permission to use crossbows for hunting. The guns were seized after an October 4th, 2009 incident that saw a naked Golden fire a 12-gauge shotgun at a couple of all-terrain vehicles that were racing near him. Jeremy Shan, 30, of Welshtown, Nova Scotia, reported being shot in the back when Golden opened fire. He and Cody Van Buskirk, 22, were later charged with mischief and trespassing at night, but they have since had their cases sent to an adult diversion program.
It sounds like we can infer from this a sort of unhealthy and unnatural relationship with guns, seeing as the language is all being... The language used here makes it sound like they're talking about his children, for one thing.
Well, it sounds to me like he's 66 years old, he was naked, he had a shotgun. These guys were charged with mischief and trespassing, so it sounds to me like he was at home, minding his own beeswax.
Like you do.
Like you do, when these ne'er-do-wells came roaring around his property on ATVs, and he walked out naked with a shotgun and fired at them, and then, actually hit one of them.
Did you say he had 43 guns?
He had 43 guns.
All right. It was just a lot of, like, reunited with his guns.
Yeah, he's not going to... They're taking them all away from him, and he's not going to be allowed to have them back until 2013.
All right.
But he can go hunting with a crossbow if he wants to.
Okay.
Because apparently the problem is the guns, not him.
I guess. Maybe that's a...
Because you can't hurt anybody with a crossbow.
They apparently haven't seen the bumper sticker.
The charges against him for shooting at the guys, by the way, were withdrawn, and he was free to go, but his weapons are still locked away. So
did the court rule that it was like their fault for being jackasses, or...
I don't know, because he said that he should have his firearms and crossbows returned to him because the prohibition order was based on the charges which were dropped. And the judge told him, it's not based on the charges. It's based on a number of circumstances that the police suggest make it not desirable in the interest of the safety of yourself or any other person that you should have firearms and ammunition.
Have a crossbow.
Here, have a crossbow.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But only if you're hunting.
Who wants a howitzer? Well, that's Canada, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, what do you want? It's a big socialist enclave up there.
You gotta have something to defend yourself in Canada.
You've got to build bypasses. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. For those of you who might have to be somewhere later on this hour, seeing how it is the lunch break for the working man, it's 12:21. You're listening to Legion of News coming up later on this hour, your Science in the March and Entertainment News. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today featuring a Taser Watch, Peanuts Watch, Mr. Aaron Duran with the Weekend Geek, and sitting in the studio with us, Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me. Comedy 101, the day focusing on the life and work of Don.
I don't know.
Me either. It's a mystery.
I have no clue.
All right. I guess we'll all find out at the same time.
Yay. In fact, let us do that science news now, shall we?
Oh, God. I mean, hooray. It's here's your Science of the March for Friday, October 28th, 2011.
Praise can be hard to take, especially if you feel it's undeserved. One study suggests the same might be true for people who give themselves too much unnecessary credit. Although the results are mixed on whether self-praise can be linked to feeling happy or depressed, there's a trend showing too much pep talk might not bode well for a person's emotional well-being. Receiving praise from others, on the other hand, has been studied a bit more. Still, some research hinted that even positive feedback from others may negatively affect a person's self-worth. This isn't to say that self-encouragement or other approaches don't help people improve their moves, but what it matters more is whether a person feels he deserves the praise to begin with. In four experiments, researchers looked at approximately 4,000 middle, high school, and undergraduate students in the United States and Hong Kong. In two setups, students completed a test and were asked to compare the performances with their classmates. After learning their scores, they also took exams that measured depressive traits. But in the other two conditions, students were told they did the opposite of how they really performed. Students who did well were told they did worse, while those who didn't do as well were told that they did better. It turns out that the students who exaggerated or downplayed their performance were also more likely to show more depressive traits. This didn't change for students who were told they did well when they really didn't. Although the findings were intriguing, it's hard to make definitive claims about the value of self-praise. So far, meeting your own expectations and being realistic about your abilities appear to be good ways to avoid getting depressed.
I came out of the other side of this story not understanding anything.
Apparently, if you already have sort of low self-esteem or you don't feel very good about yourself, and if people praise you, it doesn't help. It just actually makes you feel worse because you know you don't deserve it.
Oh, it's like hot chicks who always think they're ugly.
Or vice versa.
And hideous chicks who always think they're hot.
Yeah. Yes. More like the hot chicks who think
they're
ugly.
I'm damn hot. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And it's like, then they go home. I'm really not.
All right.
I hate myself.
I gained a pound.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Okay.
Samsung is now the world's top smartphone maker by revenue, overtaking Apple in the third quarter. Samsung hit records in both quarterly sales and operating profits this quarter,
too. How is that possible?
According to Reuters, Samsung's shipments rose 44% this quarter, while Apple saw a 16% decline in sales, failing to meet expectations. The iPhone interest is likely due to the October release of the iPhone 4S. So this past quarter, they sold less phones because people are waiting for the new one.
Oh, I see. So it's like a product cycle thing.
Right.
All right.
Customers anticipating the release may have held off on purchasing a new phone until after the end of the quarter, which covers July to September. iPhone 4S sales since its release earlier this month, however, have been strong, likely posing a serious threat to Samsung's newly won crown. Samsung doesn't anticipate a loss of momentum heading into the fourth quarter. According to a statement quoted by The Guardian, Samsung expects sales of mobile devices to remain strong. Samsung's handset and tablet business model, as both Reuters and The Guardian note, should be familiar to Apple fans. As Reuters puts it, Samsung tries to offer the Apple experience at a better price with better functionality. Yeah, good luck with your phone, which I have one, and no. Swaths of Australia's seaweed are shifting south to escape warming oceans, and many risk going extinct. Marine ecologist Dr. Thomas Wernberg of the University of Western Australia and his colleagues reported their findings in Current Biology. He says temperate species are moving to cooler environments. In Australia, there are no cooler environments beyond the south coast, so that if they are pushed to go beyond that, they basically go extinct. While a lot of attention has been paid to the impact of climate change on coral, Wernberg says the impact of seaweed has been neglected. He says while seaweeds might seem mundane, they are an important habitat and food resource for underwater animals and plants. He said just as trees in the forest provide living space for birds and other animals, so do the seaweeds in the oceans. There's a large amount of biodiversity associated with seaweeds. And while coral reefs tend to be restricted to tropical waters, seaweeds are more widespread, so any impact on them could have a broader cascading effect on marine ecosystems. So, and finally, a daily dose of aspirin should be given to people at high risk of bowel cancer, according to scientists. Two pills a day for 2 years reduced the incidence of bowel cancer by 63% in a group of 861 at-risk patients.
How do you know if you're at risk for bowel cancer?
I have no idea.
Until the doctor says, hey, your bowel's full of cancer.
Well, a lot of cancers do sort of have genetic markers. So, like, if you come from a family where a lot of people get bowel cancer, you would be at risk of bowel cancer.
A history of bad bowels.
Yes.
Okay.
Newcastle University's Professor Sir John Byrne, who led the study, said the evidence seems overwhelmingly strong. Other experts said the findings add to a growing body of proof that aspirin could be used in the fight with cancer. The study was conducted on 861 patients with Lynch syndrome. There you go. Now we know what this means, which affects one in every 1,000 people. They struggle to detect and repair damaged DNA, which means they're more likely to develop a range of cancers, including those of the bowel, womb, and stomach. When looking at all the patients in the trial, those in the group given 600 milligrams of aspirin every day developed 19 tumors compared to 34 tumors in the other control group.
I don't want any number. I'd like zero is what I'd like to aim for, especially my bowels, all the places you could have tumors.
When the researchers looked at just those patients who took the medication for at least 2 years, the reduction was 63%. There was also an effect on other cancers linked to Lynch syndrome, which fell by half in the treatment group.
I don't know what's worse, having tumors in a place that, you know, you're sort of indifferent to, or having tumors in a place that you already kind of feel is sort of icky. Because then it's just revolting. Then your inside, you're just full of blackness and cancer and goo.
I have a really, really good friend who had bowel cancer and had to have a piece of her bowel removed.
Resected.
And had to go through it. And she's gotten better now. She's all fine now many years later. But, yeah, we've always just referred to it as her ass cancer.
See, I would totally lie and say it was somewhere else. I would just say I had it in my brain. I would just, because then also they say, well, you look so good. And I go, well, you know, it's amazing now. They can just do it with small incisions. I would totally not admit that it was in my ass. Or it's like if you had, it's foreskin cancer. You know, like I would totally not, I would just lie and just say it was anywhere, you know. Where is it?
My spleen?
Because
no one even knows what the spleen does, so
right.
What the hell?
Or you just something vague. It's in my marrow, you know, just someplace that they can't really point to or look at.
Because you don't, yeah, I guess that's true. You don't want people, like, looking at you years later.
Just thinking ass all the
ass.
Time. Yeah.
Ass cancer.
Yeah, no, you don't want that. Yeah. Also,
His ass is rotting away as we speak.
He is fundamentally assless. He just sits on his spine all the time now. It's sad. Here's the thing about aspirin is that And I just know this in my I know this in my marrow, which is full of cancer, that if aspirin were introduced today, there's no way that it would be legal. There's no way that you'd be able to get aspirin without a prescription now.
It would cost a fortune.
Like if Bristol Myers Squibb or somebody just sort of came out with it, like a Pfizer we present the aspirin.
It's a miracle drug.
It'd cost like $1,000 a tablet. If you think about all the stuff that aspirin does, it's a pain reliever, it's a fever reducer, it lowers the risk or severity of heart attacks. It apparently does something with your ass and cancer.
You can grind it up and put it in a vase of flowers, and it will help preserve your cut flowers.
That's what I'm saying. It's an analgesic. I mean, it does. I mean, you know, and so that also makes you wonder, by the way, how it was ever discovered, since it comes from eating the bark of trees. Mm. So,
well,
how would they have figured that out?
That's how we discovered. I think that's how ancient man figured out a lot of things. It's like, you know, like your teeth hurt so bad you can't figure. I'm just gonna gnaw on this bark, and then you go, wow, I feel better now. And then later you start thinking, well, it didn't work when I gnawed on that other bark.
See, that's what I'm saying. There has to have been some, like, Stephen Levitt guy there going, well, wait a minute. Can I have you gnaw on five different kinds of... And you're my control group. Just swallow these stones, you know? And then you come back the next day and, like, the other guys are all dead. Mr. Gnawed on the willow tree bark. He's dead, mostly, you know, but not altogether. And then you just start working upward from there.
Yeah.
It's all a mystery. All right. Well, there you go. So there's that.
That's all the science.
Oh, and it's a blood thinner too, right? Or maybe that the thing? That's the thing about is that the reason why it actually lessens the severity of heart attacks? Because it thins your blood?
Yes, and it's also why you're not supposed to take it before you get a tattoo.
Okay, well, duly noted. There's your science on the march for Friday, October 28th, 2011. All right, here at Legion of News, Cascadia.fm. Coming up later in this hour, your entertainment news, and the next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at Rick Emerson Show. .com. Today, Mr. Aaron Duran in the studio with us. Also, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Here is... Don Taylor.
A federal judge in North Carolina rejected motions to dismiss the criminal indictment against former Senator John Edwards, clearing the way for his trial to begin in January.
Awesome.
Legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin
explains
the facts of the case are not in dispute. It's about the meaning behind the money.
Two of his big supporters, Fred Barron and Bunny Mellon, put up nearly $1 million that goes through intermediaries and goes to Real Hunter, basically to cover her living expenses and keep her quiet. So the question is, and that's all, everybody agrees that happened. The question is that an illegal campaign contribution, as the government says, or is it simply friends helping out a friend in trouble?
Seriously, first of all, I got like 100 things here. A, she's named Bunny, which is awesome. B, she's like 98. I don't know if you've ever seen Bunny.
No.
What is her name? Bunny Myers? Is that her name?
Yeah, no.
Or is Bunny Myers the chick in that 60s film? Whatever happened to Bunny Myers? Or Bunny Myers is missing. Bunny Lake is missing.
Bunny Lake is missing.
Did I just make a Bunny Lake is missing reference?
That you did, sir. That you did.
Wow. Okay, I gotta quit doing that.
Wasn't Bunny Tara Reid's character in
The Big Lebowski?
Big Lebowski, too.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So Bunny Myers, she's like 100 years old, but she's what the old timers used to call a pistol. She's one of those George Soros guys that just hates Republicans, just hates them like in her 100-year-old bones, just despises them. And so John Edwards was like, Bunny, I need $1 million to keep this skirt quiet. And she went, done and done, and like reached into a bag basically and just like handed one of her guys like $1 million or however much. And then he gave it to a guy who gave it to a guy. And then it just ended up in this bowling alley owned by John Edwards and his brother or whatever. And so she kind of funneled all this money to him. Also, the idea that he just had like an account for keeping chicks quiet is sort of awesome. I mean, that's how you know. I mean, really, that's how you know when you're a Mac. You know,
you just arrive.
You really are just like, let's see. And so this is for having my enemies killed. This is for graft for politicians. This is for buying the presidency. This here is for keeping dames quiet. That's really, you know, that your life has really escalated to a very exciting place at that point. Also, it's especially interesting to me that no one in the story denies any of the more salacious facts.
Yeah, no, it happened. We just don't know if it actually was an illegal campaign.
Yeah, like I completely got her pregnant. I'm massively fertile. Look at me. Look at my hair. Sure, my chief of staff, yes, pretended the baby was his, rooted around in the diaper to try to get DNA for a paternity test. Also, we gave her $1 million that I secretly funneled from a 100-year-old chick. Like, all of that they just sort of cop to. The only question is, like, what the money is categorized as being. It's, when is this happening? January?
Yes, indeed. January.
It's going to be a good year. I can just feel it.
Toobin also explains that it may be hard for Edwards to find a jury that just doesn't want to put him in jail.
Well, that's true.
Everybody hates this guy because of what he did, because his wife was dying of cancer. The problem is that the case is not really about that. It's about campaign finance laws. And the question is, will people's hostility to him carry over to this fairly arcane technical crime?
Wife was dying of cancer of the hate.
Not the ass.
No.
No.
Now, she was apparently, and now she's been dead long enough, we can say this, she was apparently a thoroughly unpleasant and unlikable person. So, I'm not saying that I know that to be the case. That was, that's the word on the street.
Well, police in Rust Township, Pennsylvania, have arrested a man after they said he stole a sandwich from a restaurant and then tried to flee in a forklift parked nearby. Police said Sean Faulkner, and we have an excellent, excellent...
Is he a bright-looking lad?
He looks like he deeply regrets all of these incidents.
I've chosen poorly.
He ordered food from Sieb's Pub on Babcock Boulevard and then ran out the door without paying on Sunday. Employee Cara Donatelli said that Faulkner, quote, just was very weird. We were very leery of him. That's because he has crazy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Witnesses told investigators Faulkner then tried to leave in a forklift parked in a nearby lot. The forklift doesn't travel fast, said Detective Brian Kohlhepp, so I don't know that he was able to make a speedy escape. Faulkner, who was found by responding officers sitting in the forklift, told them he saw the keys inside and drove it to a parking lot next door to Sieb's. Apparently, he was tired of walking, and he said he saw the forklift with the keys in it, and it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Was he drunk?
Said Kohlhepp. Well, he was leaving a pub.
Okay.
We've had construction vehicle thefts, but I don't know that anyone took one and used it as a getaway vehicle. Faulkner also admitted to taking the sandwich without paying. He was charged with theft and receiving stolen property. Donatelli, the waitress, said, I hope that something like that never happens again, but it was very funny.
Oh, wow. So I'm looking at this guy here. Well, he doesn't look like I thought he would. I thought he would be like some young ruffian.
He actually looks a little bit like, what the hell? No, I hate it. I have one of those mornings when I just can't think of names all of a sudden.
Sounds like?
Putty from Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was also, he's sort of equal parts Putty, Joe Squires, maybe one of the Baldwins, perhaps, or Jim Belushi. And then...
Have you jammed all three of them into, like, an atom smasher?
Yeah, and then my pal Sean Mulrooney. So if you were just to jam them all into one person... He kind of looks like this guy. He doesn't look like a bad person. He seems like a guy who maybe just has had a rough couple of weeks.
Yeah, he looks like he's regretting what happened.
Maybe, and just the forklift spoke to the child in him, and he said, "Well, maybe I can just while my cares away on top of this forklift that I'm stealing while drunk after taking a sandwich that doesn't belong to me." Yeah, it was a lot of bad choices, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, there's that.
A lunch lady at a school in Sweden performed a pole dance before shocked students and teachers in a bizarre response to complaints about her inedible food. The incident occurred Thursday, according to the Swedish newspaper Uppsala Nya Tidning, after the principal, Per Rostgard Evald, agreed with students that the cafeteria food at the school in the town of Osthammer was inedible. Cafeteria staff tried to solve the matter by heating up some pancakes for the students. However, those were served half-frozen, leading to further complaints from teachers and students. The lunch lady then...
Don't they have food in Sweden? Don't they know how to cook things?
Apparently not at this particular school.
It hasn't gotten there yet.
Have you eaten in the cafeteria at IKEA? Really, the whole Swedish meatball thing is way overhyped.
I have to tell you, in my life...
They're not that good.
I have never been to IKEA. Well, I've managed to avoid that for several years now.
I love IKEA.
Okay.
Anyway, the lunch lady became fed up with everyone complaining. And then, according to Evil, he told the newspaper... One of the lunch ladies removed her apron, unzipped her trousers, let down her hair, and started moving up and down against a pole like a pole dancer. The school's social welfare officer tried to tell her this was not acceptable behavior, but she just kept on dancing.
It seems inaccurate to link this to the waffles or pancakes or whatever that weren't cooked all the way. It seems like she might have a separate issue going on over there. That would be like somebody coming in and just saying, hey, your car is parked in ever so slightly in the wrong area. You're on this side of the yellow line. could you adjust it? And I'd say, look at this. And I just take up my penis and just wave it around. Like, it seems like the two might not.
No.
One doesn't necessarily lead to the other.
Maybe she's just been thinking about, like, taking off her pants and dancing on that pole for a long time. And finally, this was the day she snapped.
Under the cover of this scandal, she would then be able to gyrate like a gyrating.
It was the only thing she could think of that would bring her joy.
Maybe it was a diversionary tactic so one of the other guys could get away. You know, somebody, this lunch is horrible. And she went, look over here. And so the guy could, like, go out a window or something so the chef could make his escape.
A satanic lesbian who repeatedly stabbed a New Zealand grandmother and left her for dead has launched a bid for freedom.
Hold on. Opening Google image search. What's her name?
Sarah Fotini, F-O-T-I-N-I, Bird.
Sarah with an H?
With an H.
Fotini.
Yeah.
Fotini!
Bird.
F-O-T...
I-N-I.
I-N-I.
And then Bird.
Bird, B-I-R-D?
Yeah. All right. The victim says she held no bitterness against her attacker. Christchurch grandmother Dulcie Brooke was 59 when she was jumped from behind by two schoolgirls while bushwalking in Noosa National Park on Queensland's Sunshine Coast.
Oh, hello.
In 1998. Sarah Bird, 17, and her 18-year-old girlfriend, Aaliyah Shipper, attacked Ms. Brooke on the trail, beating her with a nunchuck and stabbing her 26 times with a kitchen carving knife.
Okay, she's not 17 now, right?
No.
Okay.
No, this happened in 1998.
You know what she looks like? She's cute. She's cute, and you all will know what I mean when I say this. She's cute, Manson girl style.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
She looks like a Brett girl, you know, like with the weird 70s straight hair, except apparently it was like 3 years ago or something. So, yeah.
Well, it is New Zealand. They may be a little behind the times with hairstyles and whatnot.
New Zealand, that's where they had the Heavenly Creatures thing.
I know. That's why I was wondering. It's like maybe they watched Heavenly Creatures.
Something in the
air.
And
they thought, let's do that. That looks like fun.
Okay.
Then they said, how about we kill your mom? Like, no, I like my mom. No, I like my mom, too.
No.
Let's just go kill some random old woman in the park.
You're missing the, but let's make out first.
Well, yeah, there's the let's make out first. And dream of old movies.
Yeah.
And puppet shows in our brains. So anyway, the two women who were lovers hatched a plan to attack Ms. Brooke as part of a satanic plot. They were sentenced to 11 and 20 years in prison, respectively, for attempted murder. Now Bird has applied for parole and could soon be freed. Ms. Brooke, who is now 72 and lives in Christchurch, said she was aware of the move but was happy for Bird. She said, it comes as no surprise that she's applied for parole. I have no problem with it. She's done the time. I'm happy for her so long as she goes home to her parents. I'm not bitter. I would not be where I am today if I carried my bitterness, which I had originally around with me.
What's going on in New Zealand? There's a lot of... people are weird there.
Ms. Burke had her throat cut almost from ear to ear in the attack. She spent 9 days in the hospital fighting for her life and suffered damage to her vocal cords. Shipper was released from prison in 2005 after serving fewer than 6 years. Ms. Burke does say, however, she has forgiven her attackers and hopes to get on with her life. She says, I might forgive, but I never forget. It happened 13 years ago, but it's with me every day. I've been well supported by a lot of friends. They've helped me a lot. A lot of people don't think I should forgive them, but that's how I feel.
Hey, by the way, just FYI, confidential from Rick Emerson to everyone, vocal cords does not have an H in it anywhere.
No, and this they spelled it correctly in this story.
Yeah, I'm looking at this piece here where they insist on spelling it like with like the musical chord.
Oh,
it drives me crazy.
They spelled it right in mine.
All right.
So, yeah.
I'm posting a picture of this, by the way. You can see it at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for October 28th. It'll just be labeled satanic lesbian stabby girl. All right, satanic. Then let's see, satanic. I'm missing maybe the. I heard the lesbian, but I'm missing the satanic angle.
No, they just said it was a satanic plot. I mean, let's face it. They probably weren't like.
Or is it the lesbians, and so therefore they must be also Satanists?
Yeah, I don't know.
Unless Tituba was there, teaching them the evil ways of the devil.
I just am immediately attracted to any news story that the headline reads. Satanic lesbian launches bid for freedom.
Yeah.
So
she's got kind of a large mouth, but she's got like that, a little bit of that, you know, Halloween Town, like mouth slightly too big for the face thing going on. But not an unattractive girl. She's cute in a European kind of way.
In a New Zealand-y sort of a fashion.
In a hot, covered in blood kind of way. Yeah.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right. Here's your entertainment news for Friday, October 28th, 2011. Here is Don Taylor.
Sex and the City star Mario Cantone revealed on The View that he married theater director Jerry Dixon. Cantone and Dixon have been dating for 20 years. Said Cantone to recently wed Joe Behar on the daytime talk show, "I got married for the same reasons you did. We're older now. We've been together 20 years. After 20 years, you're like, thanks for the anticlimactic honeymoon, government."
Wait a minute. I don't know who any of the people in the story are. Oh, this is two guys, I'm assuming?
Yes.
From the context of the story,
right,
I'm assuming.
Right, Mario Cantone.
Okay, and because Jerry is one of those gender-neutral names. So he
Satanic lesbian stabby girl actually looks like a very pretty high school boy.
Yeah, well, I suppose I could see that. I mean, but you see what I mean when I say she's cute in a European sort of way?
And also in a Manson girl kind of a way.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If I told you this photo from 1974, if I was like, hey,
I would totally believe it.
This is a production shot from Lovely Bones. You'd go, oh, yeah, so it is.
Marie Osmond made a short trip to the ER on Wednesday night. According to the Las Vegas Sun, the entertainer began to feel tightness in her lungs following her Donnie and Marie show at Flamingo Las Vegas. Though Osmond at first suspected bronchitis, tests and x-rays revealed the singer was healthy. She's set to continue her show this evening, but her rep says some songs might be cut short to give her vocal cords C-H-O-R-T-S. Sub rest.
Okay. Really? Is it really spelled that way?
Yes, it is.
Jerks.
The estranged father of actress Lindsay Lohan will be held at a Tampa hospital overnight for observation, hours after his second domestic violence-related arrest this week. Michael Lohan has been admitted to Tampa General Hospital for observation following a jump from a third-floor balcony in an attempt to escape from authorities early Thursday morning. Lohan, according to police, Lohan, quote, apparently leaped up from his balcony and grabbed a hold of the roof about 30 feet until he thought he was hanging over the top of the next balcony. He let go but missed the balcony and came crashing down on top of wooden high chairs that were laying on the ground.
Okay. So he really misanticipated the... Back at the Marie Osmond thing.
Okay.
So did they say what was wrong with her?
No. Apparently she's fine. They gave her all the tests and she's healthy. She was just feeling some tightness in her chest and her lung area, but she's okay.
Okay. You know in the Roadrunner cartoon where there was that one weird Roadrunner cartoon where Wile E. Coyote talks? And he does the whole thing of, like, you may ask yourself, why am I pursuing the Roadrunner? And he pulls down the chart and he shows, like, the, you know, butterscotch, filet mignon, and he's showing all the different sections of the Roadrunner, what they taste like. With Marie Osmond, it all just tastes like crazy. all of it, except, it's crazy marbled with hot. And so I always just assume every time she's in the hospital, it's because she's gone nuts and they need to like trank her up with something. Like they just got to hit her with a Thorazine gun or something and they shove her back out. Like it's one of those things where Donnie just knows that his career is just tethered to her forever. And so he just like she's going to be dead and he's going to have they're going to be Velcroing her to a mic stand at the Tropicana just so he can continue to make money. I mean, which I say with love. I'm saying that he knows where his bread is buttered.
Well, you've seen them perform in Vegas.
I have.
Mean, has she gotten to the point yet where she does the rambling, almost incoherent patter in between the songs?
No.
Which is my favorite thing that happens to longtime performers.
No, but only because it's so tightly choreographed, and I should say from where we were sitting, and we had really great seats for it, and it's a fairly small venue. Donnie was certainly not lip-syncing, and I don't think she was. But what they were doing, and this is, I assume this is him, because every group has got, you know, it's like every group has their Gene Simmons and their Ace Frehley. So there's one guy who is just like a massive control freak and just is like, you know, look, we're making money hand over fist. These fools come and they pay us a disproportionate amount of cash just to do the same crap every night. Don't blow it. And there's another guy who's just over there like, you know, cackling like a minor bird and drinking bottle after bottle of Boone's Farm. Marie is the latter half there. And so, but Donnie has got it so tightly choreographed that they just do the Vegas thing of like the improv and spontaneous jokes and sort of banter back and forth, which are clearly like the same things and the same inflections they do every night. So I don't think she is given any leeway to truly ad-lib because I think he knows that would go off the rails. Like right away, because she's got that really tight, brittle, crazy smile and laughter going in a lot. That's like one step away from madness.
Oh, did you ever watch her on like QVC with
yes.
her dolls?
Yeah. No, one of these days she's going to start laughing and never stop again.
appeal court judges on Friday upheld the 16-month jail sentence given to the son of Pink Floyd guitarist David Gilmour for a violent rampage during student protests last year. Charlie Gilmore was one of thousands who demonstrated in December against rising university tuition fees and was among a group that broke away from the main demonstration and attacked a convoy carrying Prince Charles and his wife Camilla. At Gilmore's trial earlier this year, a judge said Gilmore had jumped on the hood of a Jaguar in the royal motorcade and thrown a garbage can at the car. Gilmore also kicked a store window, stole the leg of a mannequin, and was photographed hanging from a Union flag on the cenotaph, a memorial to British war dead. The 21-year-old Cambridge University student, who has been in jail since July, pleaded guilty to violent disorder but challenged the length of his sentence. But three appeals judges said the sentence was neither manifestly excessive nor wrong in principle. Anthony Hughes, one of the three judges, said, "We do not believe that violence in this context and of the kind displayed can normally be met by other than significant sentences of immediate custody, even for those of otherwise good character." James Brown's former manager has been sentenced to 3 years of home confinement on charges he took more money than he was allowed under contract from the late singer in his final years. The Aiken Standard in Aiken, South Carolina, reported Friday that 72-year-old David Cannon entered an Alford plea to two counts of breach of trust. The plea does not admit guilt, but acknowledges there is enough evidence for a conviction. Prosecutors said Cannon was supposed to receive 5% of whatever Brown made in a year, but instead gave himself close to 15%. Cannon's also accused of stealing part of a $900,000 check, but his defense says that that was a misunderstanding.
So he didn't carry the one, he just added a one onto that. All right.
Redbox announced this week that they will be raising their rental prices. Beginning October 31st, the cost of renting a standard definition DVD from any one of the company's seemingly omnipresent red kiosks will increase to $1.22 per day from $1. The prices for Blu-ray DVDs and video game rentals will remain at $1.50 and $2, respectively. In a statement announcing the change, parent company Coinstar said that the price hike, the first for standard DVD rentals in 8 years, was primarily the result of its rising operating expenses, which include recent increases in debit card interchange fees. While the 20-cent increase per rental may seem like spare change, it is, of course, a 20% price increase. Perhaps more noteworthy, however, is the timing of the move. Wall Street analysts and media observers saw Netflix's recent price hikes and ensuing PR debacle as good news for competitors like Redbox.
Well, and so this is the other thing they're doing here is, like, under the cover of all of the... Everybody is so busy piling onto Netflix that Redbox can just sort of, like, raise their own crap because everybody's looking over there.
Yeah, it's only 20 cents.
No.
Look at them.
Yeah, seriously, look at Netflix over there while they're, like, adding another letter onto another number onto their price sign. Yeah.
MTV has introduced a new episode of Beavis and Butthead, 14 years after the series originally ended. Creator Mike Judge is still running the show, and he jokes that the world was better with Beavis.
And so here's the thing, and I should say first and foremost that I have that recorded, but I have not yet watched it. And so
I've heard good things.
Too many things, not enough time in which to do them. So damn my miserable existence. I didn't get a chance to watch it last night. Here is Mike Judge.
You know, the crime rate in almost every category went down all those years Beavis and Butthead was on the air, and the economy got better. You can draw your own conclusions. I'm just reporting the facts here.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, I know that people have made the observation that he sort of, you know, in real life, Mike Judge's speaking voice sounds a little bit like Butthead without the lisp. You know, but he also, you know, and that's him in Office Space, obviously.
And he's Hank Hill.
Yeah, but I mean, his natural speaking voice, though, that is closest to Butthead. Because I think Butthead was one of the first characters he created, and so that's why it's closest to his uninflected voice. But doesn't he also sound a little bit like Johnny Depp as Dr. Gonzo?
A little bit,
or as Raoul Duke, rather.
You know, the crime rate in almost every category went down
toward
all those
the end
years
here.
Beavis and Butthead was on the air, and the economy got better. You can draw your own conclusions. I'm just reporting the facts here.
He had he's clenching the thing in his teeth a little bit, and he's, don't take any guff from the swine.
Although the show was wildly popular in the 1990s, it was also criticized for promoting delinquency. But Judge says he thinks the years have since vindicated the program.
When I hear people tell me, oh, I grew up on Beavis and Butthead, usually they turned out okay. They seem to have jobs.
Well, okay. Fair enough. So I've got that episode recorded, and the little, I saw the outtakes. Or some sort of samples, teasers and trailers they were doing from that. And it was, I will say this, if you didn't like it before, you're probably not going to like it now. If you were a fan before, I would say that it is. The great thing about Beavis and Butthead is also its drawback, which is that there really are very few moving parts to that show. There's not a lot of subtlety. It sort of is what it is. What's up with your fingernails?
I just have one that's a different color.
Right, but it's just one on one hand. What right. drug is that for?
That's just to draw attention to my middle finger, Rick Emerson.
Okay. It doesn't indicate, it's not like, you're not indicating, you're not, it's not a message to other necrophiliacs or something.
No, well, you know what the blue fingernail on the middle finger of the right hand signifies sexually.
Well, again, I assumed humping, humping dead Boy Scouts or something.
Indeed.
Okay.
You've been reading up.
Awesome.
So there you go. It's to let anyone who may have some dead Boy Scouts lying around know I'm interested.
All right. But you don't pay for it. You don't pay.
No, God, no. A cast member on MTV's The Real World / Road Rules Challenge, The Ruins. That's actually the name of a program,
slash
by the
colon.
Way. The Real World / Road Rules Challenge,
oh.
The Ruins.
Okay.
Claims male members acted like animals during production, in one case raping her with a toothbrush. Tanya Cooley filed the suit against MTV, Bunim Murray Productions, Kenneth Santucci, Evan Cirkman, and others, claiming the two guys, quote, took another male participant's toothbrush and rubbed the toothbrush around the plaintiff's genitals, including rubbing her labia and inserting the toothbrush into the plaintiff's vagina.
Hello, everyone.
Cooley said it all happened while she was passed out cold and the cameras were rolling. Cooley said producers not only knew about the rape, they even replaced the toothbrush, but never told her what happened.
This seems implausible.
The suit also claims female cast members were stripped of their bathing suits and that male cast members were encouraged by producers to inappropriately touch female cast members' bodies, including the intimate areas. Wow, on a Real World Road Rules story show? Who would have thought?
And really, honestly, who would, like, toss themselves into the pool for a Real World show on MTV and then also have a problem with acting inappropriately on camera?
Well, and here's the thing. She said that she and other cast members reported incidents of sexual abuse, but no one paid attention to it. Oh, yeah. She was also kicked off the show after she slapped another cast member.
That's hard to believe. All right.
So, she's suing for unspecified damages.
Okay.
Steve Martin's tweets are coming out in book form. The comedian tweeted on Thursday, due to absolutely no demand, soon I'm publishing a book of my tweets. The title is long, but under 140 characters. It will be called The 10, Make That 9, Habits of Very Organized People, Make That 10. Grand Central Publishing will release the book in 2012. Martin's Twitter account, by the way, which is Steve Martin To Go on Twitter, has more than 1.7 million followers. Profits from the book will be donated to charity.
We have about 90 seconds here.
Charlie Sheen's going to do a new sitcom on FX called Anger Management. It's based on the Adam Sandler, Jack Nicholson movie.
Boy, the whole thing was just a supernova that blew itself out.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy who's head of FX says that the show is a wonderful, hilarious vehicle for Charlie's acting talents. So
that's almost certainly not true.
His new producer, by the way, is Revolution Studios founder Joe Roth.
Okay.
Who has worked with him before on Major League and Young Guns and Three Musketeers. So that's the thing.
Brent Ratner wasn't available.
How crappy you behave, you can just call your old buddies and they'll get you a TV show.
Hey, have you got anything sitting around on your desk? Anything in the slush pile?
Nobody wanted to do this anger management show that I've had sitting around for 15 years.
Here you go, kid.
Let's do that.
It's all yours. All right. And this is all true. All right, well, so there you go. Yep. It's pretty much the size of it. And so forth. Hey, don't forget, coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio. Also, Aaron Duran joining us for the Weekend Geek, plus a taser watch and a penis watch. And we'll talk about the Geek-O-Lantern contest coming to a conclusion today. So you got another, 4 hours or so. Get your entries in to Geek-O-Lantern at RickEmerson.com or contest at RickEmerson.com. You can go to Geek-O-Lantern.com and you can check out the, you can scope, peep the cool swag, yo. It's what you can do.
Is that a thing that people actually say?
Well, not so much. I'm trying to bring it back. I'm trying to insert it into the lexicon, toothbrush style. There you go. On that note, kids, we're just going to do this. Right, okay, let's just end everything. So forth. This has been another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every week, taping the studios of the Emerson News Network, high over the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by cyber wizard Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Have a safe and satisfying Friday and weekend. We will see you again Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us today.